Hey, welcome to Every Night's a School Night number 51. And we're going to be starting off here with a song by a guy named Al Hartley and the Heartbeats. Al Hartley and the Heartbeats. And his name is spelled H-A-R-T, like Bret Hart, but instead of Hart, it's Hartley, which is almost like saying something's heart-like. Is that Hart? No, it's just Hartley. It's just similar to a heart. And the group is Heartbeats, but it's spelled like the way heart is actually spelled, the word heart, H-E-A-R-T. So they didn't change it, because you see that with some of these groups where they'll have sort of a pun or a play on the singer, on the singer's last name, if their last name is a certain word or contains a certain word. You'll see where they'll make a play on words like this with Heartbeats, but they would spell it H-A-R-T-B-E-A-T-S. But no, they spelled it the way it's spelled. They spelled it the way it's spelled. And the song here, it's called Mr. Brown. Not Mr. Brown Stone, just Mr. Brown. And, you know, there's no Motley Crue here, just a motley individual, a motley fella. I think Motley Crue did Mr. Brown Stone, right? Mr. Brown Stonefelt, that's my other name. Mr. Brown Stonefelt. But it's funny how the word motley is just permanently associated with Motley Crue. You think about, you know, yeah, it's a word and, like, you know, I know what it means and occasionally I will actually use it. But I don't know that you can use it. I just referred to a motley individual, but I'm trying to think if you can actually use that word for a lone person or if it's one of those words that can only be used to refer to a group. Either way, just that word is permanently associated with Motley Crue. Even if you somehow use the word motley or write it down and you're somehow able to not think of Motley Crue when you do it, whoever reads that or hears it will. Somebody will. So it's funny how a group or just something will completely grab hold of a word and it's never going to be associated with anything else. No matter how it's used, no matter where you place it, it'll always be associated with a certain thing. And you can't buy that. You know, I think some people would like to. Some people would love to lay claim to a certain word. Because certainly not every band can can just claim a word like that. But they did a good job. If nothing else, Motley Crue did a damn good job at claiming a word, which seems to be a bigger accomplishment. When you think about how big language is, it's bigger than pop culture, it's bigger than music. To be able to claim a word is such a bigger thing to do than to have a hit single or, you know, anything else you can possibly do with a band. So really, they are masters of language. By claiming one word, I think you deserve the title master of language, because who can say they've done that? I mean, there's kids who get English degrees, or people who get their master's in English, a PhD in English. There are PhD professors out there who can't say that they have claimed a word as their own. Like, you can't buy that. You can't get a certificate for that. It makes me think of a boss I had, although it's just a different form of boss. Professors are just a different form of boss. But I had a boss who was just obsessed with the idea of making a viral video. He was like, it was going to be an advertisement. And people tried to get it through his head as politely as possible that you can't just decide to make a viral video, let alone make one that's an advertisement. Because, you know, once you try to sell something, it loses so much. And that seems like such an obvious thing to say, that like once something becomes an advertisement, you know, you can't get an organic response. Yeah, you have TV commercials that do take off and they get seared in people's heads, like the Budweiser frogs in the 90s or like What's Up or whatever the fuck. Like every once in a while, a company does actually just get into people's heads. But it's still not the same thing as making a viral video. And speaking of viral videos, too, and Motley Crue, the Pamela Lee, I mean, I can't believe I called her Pamela Lee, but I guess since we're all talking about Motley Crue here, that's how I would refer to her, but Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee sex video, that was the first real sex video I remember hearing about. I was a kid, and, you know, everyone thought Pamela Anderson was just so hot. Speaking of which, I remember when I first got the internet, I printed off this picture of Pamela Anderson, and she was like crouched down, and it took up like a whole 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, and it was super pixelated. Poor resolution, just poor resolution. But it was her kneeling, and there was no, you couldn't see her nipples or anything, but she didn't have a shirt or a bra on, and she was in like a white G-string, and she was kneeling, and you couldn't even see her ass. It was like she was just kneeling from the side, and then she had her hand over her boobs, and so it was like this profile shot of her kneeling, and her hair was so distinctive. You know, here I am, like, naked Pamela Anderson. Her hair was so distinctive. Her hair was just so distinctive. But it really was. There was something about that, like, blonde mane that she had that was so distinctly her. I didn't have any idea I'd be talking about Pamela Anderson's hair in this episode, but, you know, the best things are a surprise. Just like the best viral videos, you can't plan those. anyway, I printed that picture off, and I remember I had it, like, hidden between, I had this rack in my room. I could make a pun there, Pamela Anderson rack. So I had this little rack, and this page I printed off of Pamela Anderson, like, I hid it between like two magazines so my mom wouldn't find it. And my mom would sometimes clean my room because, like, I was a fairly clean kid, but, you know, no kid is going to be clean to their mom's standards. And so occasionally she would clean my room. And I remember after one mom cleaning, that picture was gone. And she wasn't the type to, like, crack down on me about that kind of thing. You know, that kind of subject was never really addressed. You know, we were a pretty open household, pretty, very secular, very open-minded, liberal, for lack of a better word. But never really talked about, like, what the rule was about pixelated images of Pamela Anderson and her hair being hidden between magazines. But that thing disappeared. But anyway, to go back to, like, the Pamela Anderson, Tommy Lee sex video, that was, like, the first real sex video I remember hearing about. And I'm sure they existed before. But when you think about it, I mean, I kind of took for granted that that was a thing when I was a kid. Because you think about growing up, and it's like, you know, I was born in 1985. So, you know, home camcorders weren't really big until, I don't know when the first camcorders came around, but a lot of people didn't have them, probably until I was a little kid. And so you think not that many people were able to just casually make home sex videos. And so I was probably kind of around for the first wave of that. And I'm sure there were some before I was able to remember them, but the Pamela Anderson one, Pamela Anderson, Tommy Lee, was huge. I mean, everybody talked about it. And then when the internet was new, so many places were advertising, like, so many, like, sketchy sites were like, come here to see the Pamela Anderson video. You know, there's, like, so much porn suddenly available to you with the invention of the internet, and it's like, come see this Pamela Anderson video. We got it. But it was still very analog, you know. It was like, I remember even seeing stills of it, stills of the Pamela Anderson video, and the stills were very analog. They had, what's it called, like, static, you know, tracking. Like, remember adjusting the tracking? You could see those lines on the still images even. So it's not like there was a digital copy. The source was analog. But, yeah, and then I remember this kid, Todd. He was a year older than me, and he played football, but he was, like, very nerdy, and but he was cool. Like, he was a weird, like, bridge between different things. This kid I grew up with was a bridge. But he was also this unapologetic pervert. Like, he was designing websites for people in, like, 1999, and he was, like, 14 years old. But he was also on the football team and had a bowl cut. I liked him, though. We used to just sit there in shop class and talk about, like, all things under the sun. And what I liked was he was just so unapologetically perverted. And his dad had been my T-ball coach in, like, I think I was in first grade. And he told this story about his dad finding, I feel like I've even told this on here. I don't know why I would have, except for the fact that I think about it all the time. But his dad had found Todd's internet search history, and it was, of course, like, way graphic beyond whatever his dad grew up with. And his dad said to him, he was like, Todd, like, you know, I understand, like, you know, I understand, man. I like to imagine he said man, like a dad saying man to you is cool to me. So I'll edit that in here in my own version of this story. Hey, man, I understand, like, when I was young, like, when I was your age, you know, we used to sneak a Playboy under the mattress. Like, he's like, but these pictures I saw, Todd, like, this girl was spread eagle. And that always stood out to me, is his dad saying the word spread eagle to him. It was horrifying. This girl was spread eagle. But anyway, the reason I brought this kid up isn't so I could tell his weird spread eagle story. I mean, fortunately, my mom just found a pixelated image of Pamela Anderson where you can't even see her nipples. You just see her hair, like, covering up most of her body. Like that Muppet character that's just like a blob of hair. I think there was a Muppet character like that. maybe that was Baywatch. He had this story about inviting a friend over. He had somehow, maybe because he was like a super tech nerd early on, maybe he had actually been able to see more than just the stills, and he had actually been able to download the sex tape, the sex tape, because that's what it was. The Pamela Anderson sex tape was the sex tape back then. It was the only sex tape. I think there was a Tonya Harding one, which that sounds like, if you're looking for that, like, you're into some sick shit. I feel like there was a Bret Michaels one, maybe even a Bret Michaels Tonya Harding. Like, was that a thing? That would make sense. That would make sense if they made a sex tape together. I don't know. But anyway, Todd had a friend over, and they were watching the Pamela Anderson sex tape. And there's an infamous scene in that sex tape where Tommy Lee, they're on a boat, and Tommy Lee steers, like, the steering wheel. What do you call that? Like, the wheel. I should know what it's called offhand. It's not the steering wheel, I don't think. But whatever it is on the boat, the equivalent, like the big wooden steering wheel thing. I'm kind of disappointed I don't know that. It's because no band has named themselves after that big steering wheel thing. If they had, I would know what it is. Just like I know the word Motley solely because of a guy who steered that big wheel thing with his dick. That's the infamous scene. Is at one point, like, Tommy Lee has a hard-on and he's well endowed and he's using his dick to steer a boat, which is it, you know, I don't give a fuck. Like, that is an accomplishment. Like, that is a fucking accomplishment. Literally a fucking accomplishment. To basically fuck a giant steering wheel, the boat's steering wheel, whatever that's called, to basically fuck that in the direction you want to go, because that should count as fucking it, right? You know, it's not just steering it with your dick. Like, if you, like, stick your dick through, like, the slats in one of those big wooden steering wheels and you move a boat around, like, that, you're fucking that boat where you want it to go. That's and I'm sure he's not the first person to do that. You know, boats have been around so long. You know, some captain had a little bit to drink and, like, went out there, or just somebody. You know that's been done before Tommy Lee. But anyway, Todd was saying how he had this friend over and they were watching that, and then Todd went to go use the bathroom, and then, like, he was walking back into the room and, like, the friend didn't know he was there, and it was the scene where Tommy Lee was fucking the boat, where he was steering the boat with his dick, and he saw that his friend was jerking off, and that scene was up. And beyond, like, the whatever, like, oh, it's gay thing, that's just fucking funny. Like, that is a funny thing to see. And he wasn't trying to, like, smear his friend. He wasn't trying to, like, spread that rumor all around school. Like, this was his good friend and whatever. But it was just hilarious, like, telling that story. Like, I invited my friend over to watch the Pamela Anderson sex tape, and I caught him jerking off to Tommy Lee steering the ship with his dick. And it's probably one of those things, like, what's like where he just saw it at the wrong moment, you know what I mean? Where it's like his friend, there was probably, like, it was probably showing Pamela Anderson naked, draped in her hair moments before that, and then, like, it just happened to cut to the steering wheel or the dick or whatever, like, right when Todd walked in the room. So he just happened to see that moment, because that happens. Like, if someone's looking at porn, someone, not me, but if someone's looking at porn, you know, and it's like showing the girl or whatever, or showing something heterosexual, something totally okay and heterosexual, and then it, like, cuts to the guy, like, you're not going to, like, stop jerking off just because it suddenly cut to the guy, you know? Got to stop now. But anyway, I talked to you about playing a song on here, didn't I? Al Hartley and the Heartbeats. After all that, I still have a song to play. Al Hartley and the Heartbeats, Mr. Brown. And it's a great song. I'll actually talk about the song rather than Motley Crue and sex tapes and all that. No, actually, I have one more thing to say about sex tapes. Sorry, Mr. Brown. The last thing I'll say about sex tapes is sort of like with viral videos, it became like that boss that I had that was dead set on making this like artificial viral video, not realizing that it's like the only way this advertisement is going to be a viral video is if you accidentally get hurt making it, or if like somebody shows behind the scenes and something like really embarrassing and unintentional happens. It's just one of those like forces of the universe that makes something viral, and you can't just manufacture that. You can't do it even if you're not trying to make it an advertisement or make money off of it. You can't just be like, this video is going to be viral. You know, even if it's not something, not an ad, you just can't force something to do that. In the same way that you can't decide that a band can't decide that we're going to claim this word, and anytime someone uses this word, they're going to think of us. You can't just intentionally do that. Motley Crue didn't intentionally decide, oh, hey, we're gonna claim this word forever. But they did. But it's the same thing with sex videos, because I was thinking how you don't really hear about that anymore. You'll hear about like a celebrity getting their smartphone hacked, and like there'll be like nude pictures or whatever, but you don't hear about like sex videos anymore. And I think one of the reasons for that, it's not because people don't want to see celebrities having sex, because I think people do. I think people still want to see that. I think it's because like it kind of became a thing where people were like pushing their sex videos out. Like after Kim Kardashian, she became famous because of her sex video. I sound like an old person when I say that. Sex video. A sexual video. You know, it's because of her sex video. But really, it's like after that whole era where it's like Kim Kardashian's sex video made her famous, and then I think some other celebrities leaked their own to try to get, you know, some fame. And so it became a mechanism for getting fame, whereas sex videos used to be people who were already famous, and what made their videos desirable is that you would otherwise never see them having sex. But instead, you just had these like shallow people deliberately leaking videos to get famous, people who were marginally famous trying to get more famous. And I think that kind of killed the buzz. That's why, you know, you don't hear about sex videos just being so, you know, you'll never hear about another Pamela and Tommy sex video for that reason. And it's kind of like the same logic as why you can't force a viral video. You can't, because that's what a sex video is. It's a viral video. And probably viral in more ways than one, because I'm sure a lot of those people are transmitting certain viruses in those videos. I didn't plan this, by the way. I didn't plan that tie-in there. But anyway, Mr. Brown, I do have a song here. This is just going to be a night school, not an every night's a school night. This is just becoming a night school. But Al Hartley and the Heartbeats with Mr. Brown, and it's a cool song because Mr. Brown's like the cool teacher. Al Hartley in the song, at the beginning, he talks about getting in trouble in school for telling lies. He doesn't specify what the lies are, but Mr. Brown, I guess, is a cool teacher, and he's rocking and rolling. Al Hartley and the Heartbeats with Mr. Brown, finally.
I had to stay after school one day for telling the teacher lies. I passed by the office and I heard a sound, and as I looked around, there was Mr. Brown rocking and rolling, popping and a popping. It's you, Mr. Brown. Keep a vessel to yourself. I said, yes, sir, Mr. Brown. I won't tell a son. The very next day I was at school, reaching for the same old clothes. I didn't have to stay at school again, so I sure was glad. Mr. Brown told the Mrs. Jones that I was a pretty good lad. Rocking and a rolling, popping and a popping. It's you, Mr. Brown. Rocking and a rolling, popping and a popping. What a pleasure to get around. Well, I wouldn't graduate for another year, and man, I couldn't go that route. I've been in school for 11
just gotta get out.
It's you, Mr. Brown. Rockin' and a rollin', boppin' and a poppin'. What a pleasure to get around. I wouldn't graduate for another year, and then I couldn't go that route. I've been in school for 11 long years, and I just gotta get out. Rockin' and a rollin', boppin' and a poppin'. It's you, Mr. Brown. Rockin' and a rollin', boppin' and a poppin'.
Yeah, Mr. Brown sounds like a pretty cool guy to me, if I'm understanding that song correctly. We have another Mr. song here. Actually, another Mr. B-R-O song. A song that starts with the letters Mr. B-R-O, but not Mr. Bro. I'm Mr. Bro. This song is a guy who's not as cool as Mr. Brown, and that's because his name is Mr. Broken Heart, because who wants to invite that guy to your party? Mr. Broken Heart. Oh, hey, look, it's Mr. Broken Heart. You need to start hanging around with Mr. Brown. But it's by a guy named Art Tucker, Mr. Broken Heart by Art Tucker. He tucks art under his shirt and steals it. The name Art's funny because it's short for Arthur, and you used to see a lot more guys with that name, Art. And there's still guys named Arthur, but they don't go by Art for obvious reasons these days. But you don't hear people name their kids Art. You don't hear people, like, as in artistic. You know, you don't hear people name their kids Art in reference to that, which is kind of weird because I've met people, like, I remember I met a little girl named Lyric once. Lyric. And I've heard there's different references to creative subjects that come up when people name their children. They'll name their children after, like, things in the general field of creativity. But I don't think I've ever met anybody with the name Art that isn't just an older person named Arthur. It's kind of weird. It's weird that people will, like, name their kids all sorts of ridiculous, pretentious things, but they don't just name their kids Art. Like, my kid's a piece of art. You know, you don't see that. It'd be great, though, if somebody named their kid Mr. Broken Heart. Art Tucker, Mr. Broken Heart.
If you rise me a listener, don't address it the usual way. Rise me, Mr. Broken Heart.
Mr. Broken Heart, to any USA.
I've tried to hide the way I feel and never let it show. For you always come home to me, no matter where you go. And tonight I fight to keep the way I feel from showing through. But if you were me, could you still be this much in love with you? Would you turn your head when things are said as though they meant no harm? And after all the nights alone, would you still wait with open arms? Could you hide the tears, put aside the fears the way I've had to do? And if you were me, could you still be this much in love with you? Picture me in the arms of another man. Try to live on love at second hand. If you knew that just last night I'd been untrue.
Mr. Broken Heart was followed up with Patsy Sledd, If You Were Me. Patsy Sledd. Her name is tough. That's a tough name. And I don't know why. Sledd, it's Sledd with two D's. S-L-E-D-D. It just sounds like a tough person. Patsy Sledd. And I don't know why when you think about like what a sled is. Like a sled doesn't seem particularly tough to me. But the word itself is. It's almost like sledge. But Patsy Sledd, I've played her before. I played the song Lay Down from her album Chip Chip. I always like that title. Chip Chip. Chip Chip. It's got a great album cover. I've played that, and I think I've played her song with Warner Mack, which is one of my favorite power-up hymns, which is Backbone Beats Wishbone Every Time. And that's just the absolute truth. Backbone does beat Wishbone every time. Patsy Sledd, she's not quite on the level of, Tammy Wynette or Dolly Parton, obviously. She's much more of like a silver or bronze medalist in that game. But songs like that, to me, are, you know, almost have that sort of power to them. That one I just played, If You Were Me, it almost, it's like a silver medalist of that category of just powerful female country. She's got a great voice, but there's a really sharp drop-off, I feel like, with iconic female country, where it's like you have those just absolute, the women who are just the absolute pinnacle of the style, of the genre, but there's a pretty sharp drop-off, and there's good raw stuff, there's good obscure stuff, but there's just a lot more male country in general, so it's probably why there's less of a steep drop-off. And I also feel, though, like those, like Tammy and Dolly tend to be, I mean, they to me are the best of female country, whereas I don't necessarily think that the most famous male singers are the best of male country. I don't necessarily think there's an equivalent there. I don't know. But, it was a good song to follow up Mr. Broken Heart with. You think about that, that song was about, if you write to me, the theme of the song was, if you write me a letter, address it from now on as Mr. Broken Heart. And that's something that, you know, some guys just never get over a broken heart. And I was thinking about this the other day for some unrelated reason, but I was thinking, never trust someone who can't get over a broken heart. Like, we all have some, like, hole in our heart that can't be filled by someone who we dated or was in our past. You know, that's real, and you have to acknowledge that. But it's like, some guys just never get over a broken heart. And, you know, those are the people that evolution has discarded. You know, you think about, like, biological determinism and all that. Like, if somebody just can't get over a broken heart, get some fucking perspective, you know? Get some perspective, Mr. Broken Heart. And here's some perspective. It's going to be some rugged but grand music from a guy named Frank Thayer. Frank Thayer. And the first song is going to be The Glory of Her Love, which I could see this song being kind of cheesy if it weren't, if the production weren't so rugged. If it were overproduced with, you know, a bunch of too much sweetener. And by sweetener, that's sort of the orchestral sweeps. I think that can kind of take music down a notch. And you see it in a lot of the more popular music on the bigger labels where, you know, yeah, I mean, the sweetener is often great. You think about, like, classic 1960s Roy Orbison, and, I mean, almost anything that was a hit, and it has that orchestral sweetener throughout it. But it's nice when you come across stuff that doesn't quite have that production value, and if it does have sweetener, it's raw sweetener. I was trying to think of another word for sweetener. Sweet and low. It's more sweet and low. But The Glory of Her Love, I think, benefits from having a slightly more rugged production than you might expect for a song that's this, you know, just big. I mean, I imagine this guy standing on a mountaintop. If you're going to use the word glory, though, you know, you better, you know, be ready to stand at a mountaintop. But the second song is even better, and it's called Evening Shadows, and it has just an incredible and unique guitar part. Throughout the entire song, the guitar throughout this song is just incredible. It gives me chills. And just the topic of it, too, it's very much a night person song. It's that sort of the glorious glow of night. And that's something I sort of miss about being out at night more. I don't spend quite as much time out in the early morning hours and that kind of thing because I don't go out drinking and stuff anymore. So there's this strange glow, like despite the darkness of everything out and about when you're out in the middle of the night, walking home, whatever, there's this strange glow that the night has. And I guess that would be called stars and the moon. I guess that strange glow comes from the stars and the moon, but not really. There's something just strange. It's almost like when your eyes adjust to night, there's this strange glow that develops that I can't quite explain. It's a cool little phenomena. And if you've never experienced it, I recommend just going out at night sometime. I recommend just going out at night sometime. So Frank Thayer, The Glory of Her Love and Evening Shadows.
When she walks, she's a queen, and I know that I worship every move that she makes, and I love her so much that I just live for her touch and her smile full of sunshine, and I die for the glory of her love. Close to mine make me feel like a king, and when she sighs, angels sing, but I pay no attention, 'cause I'm lost in the glory of her love. On a cloud. shadows call to me when I'm all alone. Evening shadows call to me. Where has my love gone? Where has my love gone? You left me here in misery to cry my blues alone. When shadows come at evening time, I know you're still the one, I know you're still the one. And when I'm with another, I know it could be true. I can't give my love to her, my heart's still with you. Shadows call to me each night. Tears, a symbol of my lasting love throughout all the years, throughout all the years. Now shadows call to me each night. Tears, a symbol of my lasting love throughout all the years, throughout all the years.
Yeah, Evening Shadows, that one is a good reminder that night is the original hallucinogen. And nothing better evidences that than Evening Shadows, as the song is titled. Shadows are obviously very hallucinatory. I mean, you just, even seeing your shadow during the day when the sun is out, it's a distortion of you or what you think you are. But at night, it's a whole other story. I mean, night kind of joins everybody's shadows together. It kind of joins everything together. And, you know, during the day, yeah, the sun might be out, this and that, but everything's essentially the same color and tone, whether it's a little bit brighter because of the sun or because of this or that. But at night, you know, it really changes the color of everything, and not just because it's darker. It doesn't just make things blacker, but even the colors you do see are kind of different. And for that reason, I say night is the original hallucinogen. And I'm going to keep going on that subject. I do want to say, like, that song, The Glory of Her Love, the first one, I remembered it being cheesier than it is. It was a lot more understated and minimal than I remembered before I played it, so that was kind of a nice surprise. But Evening Shadows, I wasn't surprised at all, because that's just a classic, a personal classic. One of those songs that I can't imagine it sounding any different. Between the theme and the actual sound of it, it's perfect. And that guitar, too, it kind of follows a sort of a doo-wop note progression, chord progression, that sort of sense of melody, that minor key sort of thing. Except that guitar has just the perfect little flair on it that you don't hear anywhere. I mean, you don't hear songs that have that style of guitar playing. I don't know what it would be called, if anything. It's just the notes have a little more flair on them, it's almost Spanish-like, but with a better sense of melody. Yeah, we're going to keep going on that. You know, speaking of night being the original hallucinogen, Evening Shadows sort of captured, like, being alone out in the night and that sort of glow. But this song is going to continue on the night world tip, and it's called Night World, but it's about escaping the night and going into establishments, honky-tonks, saloons, the places people go to escape the night, but they're nonetheless a night world unto themselves, by an artist named Gene Woods. Gene Woods with Night World, a great country song.
The sound of dancing feet from the bar just down the street, where flashing signs invite you to the night world. hear the laughter from inside. It only hides the tears they cry. Only people who live in the night world. A place for broken hearts to hide from the happy world outside, where loneliness and heartaches meet to forget old memories. Hear the sad, sad songs they play about a love who's gone astray. Lonely people who live in the night. Find forgetfulness from a world of loneliness in the arms of someone new in the night world. They try to wash her from their minds with each drink of warm red wine. Only people who live in the night world. Broken hearts to hide from the happy world outside, where loneliness and heartaches meet to forget old memories. Hear the sad, sad songs they play about a love who's gone astray. Lonely people who live in the night.
Sad, sad creatures of the night world, or as we call them, adults. But we're going to turn away from the adult subject matter, those adults who are hanging out in the night world watching sex videos. They're just hanging out in the night world. What do you do in the night world? Watch sex videos? That's exactly what they do. But we're going to go back to the high school subject matter with a three-song block from Tony Casanova. Hey, it's a Tony Casanova. Hey, Tony Casanova's here. Hey, this party's just getting started because Tony Casanova just showed up. I feel like if your name is Tony and you have a last name that ends in a vowel, your name's just going to sound like Tony Casanova. And what Tony is there out there that's name doesn't end in a vowel? That's just one of the most holy Italian names that there can possibly be. Tony. I mean, if you name your son Anthony and you're not Italian, you're fucking weird, man. Anthony. Come here, Anthony. But the first song by Tony Casanova is going to be My Little Nancy. A hot little Nancy. He talks about his teenage lover. And you think about the name Nancy, and I didn't know any Nancys growing up who weren't middle-aged moms. But back when this song was made in the late 1950s, all three of these songs are from between 1958 and 1959. So a little bit earlier. I mean, I found that I very rarely actually play stuff from the 1950s on this show. Most of it's early 60s, but there is that late 1950s, early 60s cusp, because you think the first few years of every decade are really just pulling from the last few years of the previous decade. The way we divide decades is kind of ridiculous, because like if you see movies or things from the very early 80s, I'd say up until 83, but definitely 82, they really feel more like the 1970s. I have that sort of experience where I see the fashion and I just see the vibe and I'm like, oh, this must be from the late 70s. And it's like, oh, no, it's from 82, 83. So it's the way we divide decades is kind of funny. And you think about the early 90s really has more in common with the second half of the 80s than it does the rest of the 90s. But So I would say, like, in that way, most of what I play on here, I feel like has more of a 1950s feel, even if it's from the early 60s. But these songs are actually from the late 1950s. And the first one is My Little Nancy, back when teenage girls were named Nancy. And as he says, my teenage lover. And I hope that he's a teenager, too, although that's not specified in the song. I don't think it is, at least. I don't think he mentions being the same age. But I try to find continuity when I play a block, even if there's not direct intentional continuity, which is rare. You know, you think about Leslie Gore, It's My Party, and then she did the follow-up song, It's Judy's Turn to Cry, and that's an intentional follow-up. There's supposed to be continuity between those songs. Those songs exist in the same scenario. And you do have that, but it's pretty rare. But I do try to find continuity in blocks, especially of songs, even when it's not intentional. And I like when there's nothing in each song in a block that rules out continuity, if that makes any sense. I like when there's no subject matter in a song that rules it out from being connected to another song that I want to play. It's just one of those weird, neurotic little things, but still, I like it. And in this case, I feel like these three songs fit together really well. My Little Nancy, about his teenage lover. And then the second song is Diary of a High School Bride, which sounds like the name of a horror movie, looking at it through modern eyes. Diary of a High School Bride. Because even if it's a high school bride marrying a high school groom, even if everybody involved is in high school, there's still just something. You know, because we live in an age where people are getting married later and later, if at all. And the idea of someone getting married in high school just kind of sounds like a crime. Even if it's consensual, even if both people are still in high school, that almost makes it more of a crime in some weird way. Like two people that young deciding to join together for life. It reminds me of a conversation. I was talking to a friend recently. He's a little bit older than I am. He's in his mid-30s. And his parents have been together since high school, and they got married, I think, after high school. But still, they've been together since high school with no separation, no nothing. No nothing. Tony Casanova, no nothing. And that's just such a different in perspective. You think about my friend being in his mid-30s and not being married, and here his parents have been basically part of a two. You know, they've been conjoined. It's like they haven't just been one person as adults. And that will really shape your perspective, you know? It's like, because when you're married, you become two, you know, you become this weird, like, hybrid person, no matter how independent you are. I mean, it's the same for being in any relationship, really. Unless you're me and your independence just like sabotages any attempt at a long-term relationship. But, you know, because that's the only reason my relationships don't work out. It's just my independence, nothing more. That's not a cover for all sorts of other pathologies. but anyway, Diary of a High School Bride. It definitely could be in the same story as My Little Nancy, the teenage lover. Diary of a High School Bride, you know, he's getting married to Little Nancy. Hot Little Nancy. And then the third song. You know, I mentioned Diary of a High School Bride sounds like the name of a horror movie to me. The third song very much is a horror movie. It's just called The Grave. And it kind of shifts styles. My Little Nancy is more of a rocking, upbeat tune. Diary of a High School Bride is very blue. Very blue. And downcast. It's sort of, you know, it's a sad song about getting married young. But The Grave is just straight up sad. But it's done in more of a garagey style. It sounds more like garage rock. It's great. You know, it's about his it's great. It's about his girlfriend dying, or his high school bride dying. And it's the perfect follow-up because it goes from this upbeat Nancy song, a Nancy song, to this downcast Diary of a High School Bride, to her just straight up dying. But it's not specified that she died young. The grave could be him singing decades later. Maybe it's him as an old man and his wife died of old age and he's just sad about that. But no, I think it's pretty clear from the context that Tony Casanova's girl died young and he's looking down upon her in the grave, which is a good tie-in to Halloween time. It's a tie-in to Oktoberfest. We don't celebrate Halloween here. We just celebrate Oktoberfest. Tony Casanova Oktoberfest. I can't make a joke there. Anyway, Tony Casanova, My Little Nancy, Diary of a High School Bride, The Grave, A Story, late 1950s.
She ought to be on the movie screen, my beautiful teenage queen, my little Nancy. Every magazine cover, my beautiful teenage lover, my little Nancy. When my girl and I walk by, you ought to see the guys give her the eye. And I feel so good inside, cause she's my baby. Don't be maybe. She's so fine, she's so dreamy. You ought to see her in a small bikini, my little Nancy.
See you.
it's got to be rough when your high school bride, little Nancy, ends up in the grave. Worked all three of those song titles into that last sentence. But yeah, I imagine that is very rough for a guy like Tony Casanova. You fall in love young and your lover dies. I hate that word. I hate the word lover. It makes me think, I don't even know what it makes me think of, but I guess it makes me think of like polyamory and like people are like, oh, that's my lover. That's my primary, because that's very attractive language. My lover, my primary. Nothing even against people who want to pursue those sort of alternative lifestyles. Although it's a lot more common. It's funny how people, there are a lot more polyamorous people who don't call themselves polyamorous because they're just cheaters. We just call them cheaters. Yeah, I feel like a guy, if your high school bride dies on you, I feel like you can ask to be called Mr. Broken Heart, to go back to that Art Tucker song from earlier. I think you're allowed to ask people to address you via letter as Mr. Broken Heart if your lover dies. There I am using it again, lover. I feel disgusting. I feel disgusting using that word. Not because there's anything wrong with love. I don't know what it is about that word that bothers me. I'm going to be playing a gospel song next. It's a twangy gospel song from 1964 by the Murphy Trio. And it's called I Found What I Was Searching For. And it doesn't actually say specifically what they were searching for. It's heavily implied that it's some sort of spiritual reckoning, maybe God, maybe the Lord. Although what I like about that stuff, I like things that are as nonspecific as possible when it comes to spirituality. I mean, some specificity is necessary, but I like when things are general. Like, you don't have to define a greater power. You don't have to define even God. Even if you call it God, you don't have to, like, specifically define exactly what form that takes. And I think it's often more powerful when you think about it. It's comprehensive, just like evening shadows, the night. I think that God, the more comprehensive, the more you see something like God or some great spiritual force as nothing, the more it becomes everything. And so in that way, when you're searching for nothing, I think you're more likely to find everything. But it's funny how people think they're searching for love. To kind of tie it into that previous thing, you know, with Tony Casanova, all those songs were about love. And people treat love like it's this end goal, or they treat finding their special person, their loved, I was going to say lover again, but they treat finding that person or finding just love itself like it's the end goal instead of a process. And I think they set themselves up for failure. And I think that's why people get into a relationship or they get married and they have that excitement where they're like, oh, you know, they have that early spell that you're under. And then when that kind of fades away, they're like, now what? I don't feel the same about this person. Or I'm bored. You know, people go through that. They get married, especially if they get married young, and they're suddenly like, well, what else am I supposed to do here? Because you can have kids, you can buy a house, you can do all these normal things, but people are still empty. So that's why they end up like looking elsewhere. That's why they end up with all sorts of problems and unaddressed issues, because they thought that love was the end result or the goal, when it's still very important. And I'm not devaluing love by saying it's not a goal, but if you see it as part of a process and you see like joining up with a person, getting married as part of a process, I think you're less likely to consider it boring and dull, and you're more likely to get something out of it because you're not trying to mine that little speck of love for everything. You're not trying to just like, because that's kind of what people do. It's like they find love and then they're just like, I've got to mine this for all it's worth. When it's like, no, that love, it should be guiding you to mine everything else, to mine the entire world, you know, of what it's worth, rather than just mining this little thing. But people do that with almost everything. I mean, they're constantly searching for something, and they I think in the same way that, like, when I mentioned that when people try to define God too much, or define the universe for that matter. I think the universe is a good way to put it, a very comprehensive way to put it that also doesn't limit. Because, I mean, when you say the universe, I think of space, but that's really a very limited view of things. I mean, the universe is so, we can't even comprehend it. We truly cannot. And I think the less that you try to comprehend something, the more value you're going to get out of it. And the more you see yourself as just going through a process, and these different things that are coming into your life are part of that process, and they are processes of their own. Processes. Anyway, Murphy Trio, I found what I was searching for. Who knows what it is? Who knows what the Murphy Trio was searching for? But I think if you're searching for something that is more undefined and you're just kind of going off intuition, the more likely it's going to have value to you. Whereas if you're searching for something that has some limited definition, no matter what it is, whether it's love, whether it's God, it could be anything. It could be, I want to find that 1958 gold coin. You know, if you're looking for that, you might miss out on like the 1945 jewel. I don't know. But Murphy Trio, I found what I was searching for. Whatever it is, it's powerful spiritual music.
For many years I've wandered, searching here and there, trying to find peace of mind, no one seemed to care. I tried the worldly pleasures, nothing satisfied me, but I found what I was longing for one night upon my knee. Well, I found what I was searching for when Jesus saved my soul. I found what I was looking for when he washed and made me whole. I heard the old-time gospel preached and repented of my sins. And I found what I was searching for when I was born again. My sorrows were so many, my burdens hard to bear. My heart, it was so heavy, loaded down with care. One day I heard about Jesus, how much he cared for me. And I found what I was searching for one night upon my knees. Well, I found what I was searching for when Jesus saved my soul. I found what I was looking for when he washed and made me whole. I heard the old-time gospel preached, repented of my sins. And I found what I was searching for when I was born again. Some people fail to see the way, they shun the gospel call. They look upon the Savior with no regard at all. But let me tell you, sinner, Jesus loves you too. He put God's love within my heart, he'll do the same for you. Well, I found what I was searching for when Jesus saved my soul. I found what I was looking for when he washed and made me whole. I heard the old-time gospel preached, repented of my sin. And I found what I was searching for when I was born again.
Yeah, the Murphy Trio may have found what they were searching for, but we haven't quite yet found what we are searching for here. And that's because we are searching for sex videos. Every night's a school night is searching for sex videos. We just got the internet. We're in 5th or 6th grade, and we're searching for Pamela Anderson sex videos. But we have to settle for stills. And that's partly because the computer can't handle videos. You know, you think about that. Computers back then, back at the time that I would have been searching for Pamela Anderson's sex video, Back then, computers couldn't really handle videos. You didn't have streaming videos everywhere like they have today. You know, you could download a video, but you would have to have the right player, which not there was a lot of incompatibility with that kind of stuff. And then the download is going to take forever. Downloading a video on a 28.8K modem, by the time it's done, your mom's going to be home, and you have to hide the file somewhere, you know, so she doesn't accidentally open it. You know, so you can't really, you know, it's almost like beggars can't be choosers. If you're searching for something, you can't choose what comes as a result of that search. And I had to settle for stills. I had to settle for a pixelated photo of Pamela Anderson crouching. I couldn't watch Tommy Lee steer a ship with his dick. I had to settle for a picture of Pamela Anderson's hair. But it's better to be as nonspecific as you can be if you're truly searching for something. I mean, you want to have something in mind. You want to have, you know, you got to be, you're not just searching for nothing. Although I just said that. I just said you should be searching for nothing if you want to find everything. but anyway, this next song, it's going to be a continuation of the search theme, and it's also going to close out the episode. It's by Barbie Bennett. I wanted to say Barbie Bennett, but it's B-E-N-E-T, like Jean-Benet Ramsey, but it's Barbie Bennett. Barbie Bennett Ramsey. God, that's fucking insane. Barbie Bennett, because that's clearly what like those child pageants are going for, is they're trying to create a Barbie. But who knew that decades earlier there was a Barbie Bennett, and she had a song called Search for the Truth. And that's really, if you're going to be searching for anything, it should really be the truth. And you can't put any parameters on that. If you're truly, earnestly searching for the truth, you can put no parameters on what the truth might be. Because that's so much of what people do. Everyone tries to be well-researched and well-read, or maybe not everybody, but that's something that people try to do. They try to be well-informed. But in trying to be informed about our world, and I don't necessarily mean informed about one thing in particular, like politics or this or science or history or anything in particular, people in general, they like to think of themselves as in some pursuit of truth where ultimately they will be well-informed and knowledgeable about what's out there. But they put these very strict parameters on that search, and you can't do that with the truth. If you're searching for the truth, you have to be prepared for the result to be the last thing you want. That's truly it, you know, and you see it a lot in the sciences where people are, they conduct these experiments then, or just some sort of study, and the results come back, you know, not very favorable. And, you know, what do you do then? You know, what do you do then when the results aren't very favorable, when the truth isn't very favorable? Well, you accept it. And you have to be as nonspecific as possible if you are searching for the truth. And I think Barbie Bennett is coming from the right place. I think she knows how to search for the truth. Basically, you can't put the truth in quotes. That's a stupid reference. if you want to search for something specific in a search engine, you put it in these quotes. If you want to do a Yahoo search for the truth, you got to leave the quotes off. But really, if you want to search for the truth, you have to be as nonspecific as possible with zero parameters. Otherwise, you're not getting the truth. And you're lucky if you get the truth anyway, because the truth to me is something that transcends everything. The truth is what makes two opposing, seemingly dissonant ideas one and the same. It's taking a universal, bigger picture. It's a bigger picture view of the bigger picture. It's like taking one step back, and each time you take a step back, there's a camera filming another camera. And you just end up with this weird meta view of everything. That, to me, is what the truth actually is. And then it just keeps expanding from there. It really never ends. People talk about how the universe is constantly expanding, which how the fuck do we know that? Like, really? I mean, I believe it. I believe it. I believe that every time like something moves or something is said on planet Earth, it expands the universe a little bit more. So with that in mind, I totally believe that the universe is constantly expanding, and that's because the truth is constantly expanding. I think as more things come into reality, the more things become true. And this is some like weird word game. I don't even know what I'm saying at this point. But the search for the truth starts with a great lyric. And as Barbie Benet says, here I am talking about JonBenet and sex videos. But Barbie Benet says, there's a road before us, not an endless forest. And just that visual of an endless forest is, I'm going to love a song that's, especially a song, a gospel-y old song of from this time period that references an endless forest. There's a road before us, not an endless forest. But when you see that endless forest, you have to acknowledge that maybe there is a road through that endless forest. So I don't know if Barbie Benet is right that those things can't be one and the same. There's a road before us, not an endless forest. While the road might just go right through the forest, it might just be a little trail. I don't know. Barbie Benet, Search for the Truth. School Night number 51. Spiraling Out of Control and Back Again.
By my side, With the help of God, I know I can be strong. With the help of God, I know I can be strong to make this land our home. If I must fight, I'll fight to make this land our own until is mine.